Welcome to another episode of Our Interesting Times. It's my pleasure to have Patrick Wood back on the show. Patrick is the author of several books, including Technocracy Rising, The Trojan Horse of Global Transformation, and the more recent Technocracy, The Hard Road to World Order. Patrick is an economist, a financial analyst, and author. He's also the founder of Executive Director of Citizens for Free Speech, a tax-exempt organization dedicated to defending and promoting the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. Patrick's primary website is Technocracy News. That's www.technocracy.news. So, Patrick, how are you doing this evening?
Hey, doing great. Always ready to talk about this. This is the only thing in the news right now. It's the only story on the planet.
Yeah, this started as a public health crisis. Now I think it's a cover largely not a unique public health crisis. There's a lot of debate about what the nature of this thing is. Whatever reality there is to it, it's safe to say that it's a cover for another operation, perhaps several operations. As of now, this is that worldometer that counts the dead. We don't do this for heart disease or cancer. I don't see one for. I guess you could probably find one for heart disease, cancer, automobile accidents, starvation, malaria, whatever. But anyway, the coronavirus cases globally are just over 3 million, 3,055,651, reportedly. There's some problem with testing, from what I understand. Deaths are reported at 211,065. Again, there's a problem with that because of what they've been, the games they've been playing with the death certificates. As of now, 97% are reported in mild condition. 3% cases are considered serious or critical. In the United States, we have 1 million, just over 1 million cases with 56,000 reported deaths. My own state, 458 deaths reportedly out of just over 13,000 cases. Put that in perspective, I think Virginia reports anywhere from between like 1,200 to 1,500 deaths a year from flu. Of course, these numbers do sound bad, but if you put them in the proper context, the flu, this is according to trusted source, the flu resulted in 9.3 million to 49 million illnesses each year in the United States since 2010. Each year, on average, 5 to 20% of the U.S. population gets the flu. It's estimated that the flu results in 31.4 million outpatient visits and more than 200,000 hospitalizations each year. During severe 2017-2018 flu season, one of the longest in recent years, estimates indicate that more than 900,000 people were hospitalized and more than 80,000 people died from that flu. According to Pharmacy and Therapeutics, influenza is a highly contagious respiratory illness that is responsible for a significant morbidity and mortality. Approximately 9% of the world's population is affected annually, with up to 1 billion infections each year, 3 to 5 million severe cases, and 300,000 to 500,000 deaths each year. So put that in perspective. It's strange, oddly enough, the UK government in March 23rd, removed COVID-19 from its high consequence infectious disease list. But that was just after or just before it imposed what they call the lockdown there. I mean, we're 6 weeks into this declared pandemic, and the skeptics of the draconian measures appear to have been vindicated. You know, the so-called experts have admitted that COVID-19 virus is nowhere near as deadly as they initially projected. Of course, then we have these flawed fatality ratios, irregularities regarding death certificates that I alluded to. They appear to be padding the numbers for various reasons. And of course, there's a junk science-based mandates for social distancing and even the more problematic sheltering at home, the supposed lockdown. That's pretty much causing the economy to shut down and cause a lot of misery and concern and stress in people. I think the Trump administration came out and sort of said, we expect depression-era unemployment rates. Kind of, what, you know, it's kind of tough in an election year. 16% they're predicting. It means it's probably closer to 25%. And yet we were told there's a new normal and that we must accept as a condition for our release from our house arrest, and we must accept total surveillance, biometric immunity passports, and hastily developed experimental vaccines. So I had you on because I wanted to talk about, you know, sort of supposed that the response to this thing, to this virus, is they seem to be implementing, what you would call technocracy, sort of accelerating it. Would you like right? Am I correct in that, or is that?
Well, that would be my read on it for sure. I've written about technocracy now for many years, and you know, as you know, as you might imagine, a lot of people just poo-pooed it. No, no, it's that's not possibly that. It's the communist in our government, or the socialist, or whatever, that are giving us fits, or it's the, just the liberal Democrats. They're the blame. But that doesn't even begin to address what's going on here, because this is a global issue, number one. It's not just America, so it's just foolish or foolhardy to try and, you know, talk about this thing in just terms of one single nation. This is a global pandemic, as they call it, and it's not just a, it's more than a pandemic, obviously, but it is a global issue at large, because the entire global economic system has been shut down, summarily shut down. And I have theorized in the past, in fact, I wrote in one of my books 5 years ago, that when, as, and if the technocrats that are running the, this whole mantra get going towards technocracy, if they ever get to the point where they know that they can declare game over, would they do it? You know, would they actually do it? Say, okay, the system is being shut down, and we'll see you on the other side. And that's been, you know, that's been the moral hazard of the last 25 years, is that capitalism and free enterprise has been on the chopping block. It's been on death row, if you will, as far as these people are concerned, and they want to see the untimely demise of capitalism and free enterprise so that they can usher in this new economic system. It's not just the word technocracy. Most people still don't know what that means, but they, most people have heard of the term sustainable development. That's something the United Nations has been focusing on for many years. And sustainable development and technocracy are functionally equivalent. They're both resource-based economic systems designed to capitalism and free enterprise altogether. And it will never work, I have to say. I have an economic background. It will never work. It's a crack system. But that's immaterial to these people, and it's that's almost immaterial to the discussion. The technocrats today have pulled off the biggest coup that they've ever had in the last 100 years by accomplishing the shutdown of the global economy. Now, the fact that, you know, anybody can say, well, it's a political thing. It was somebody did this for political reasons. Are you kidding? How many nations are there in the world? About 197? And virtually every one of them right now has been panicked and stampeded into shutting down their economic system. This is not a left-right issue. This is not a Democrat-Republican issue. This isn't a Marxist-slash-fascist issue. This is an issue of somebody having enough clout to shut down the global economic system. Now, you just, people just need to stop and think about this. Who would have such clout to do it? They better answer that really quickly, because these people aren't going away. They've got to shut down right now, and we may temporarily reopen a little bit, but don't think this is not going to repeat on us like a bad joke. As other waves of virus come along, they'll be out in force doing the same thing. Oh, time to shut down again. Got to shut everything down. So the fact that the whole world is shut down tells you somebody has an undue influence in this whole process. And that's what I'm concerned about.
Yes, the reaction, some call it an overreaction. I don't think it was an overreaction, because the objective was this very thing, the sort of the shutting down of the U.S. economy to reset it. I mean, many people have cited the, in the fall, there was the repo market and the fact that the Federal Reserve is having to pump in, you know, hundreds of billions and trillions to keep it going.
Yeah.
We never really addressed the problems going back to 2008 in the housing crisis. And of course, we bailed out all the big banks this time around. So conveniently, they declare a pandemic and shut the economy down. And it's a good cover for the economic shutdown and also for the economic depression that it creates. And, you know, in this case, they can just blame a virus as opposed to, you know, blaming policies or bankers. The virus is a cover, you know, for the economic depression that they appear to want. And it's like I said, it's stunning to hear the White House openly talking about depression-era unemployment, and pretty much saying, oh, well, nothing we can do about it because it's the virus. But the problem with that is, if you look at the numbers, the virus, even the reported death toll and the reported morbidity rates simply don't justify this type of reaction. And again, as those are greatly padded by fraud with the death certificates, and other doctors have come out and sort of blown the whistle on that. And then there's kind of a broad understanding of that now, because there's jokes you're seeing, memes out there. And it's sort of the same way that the jokes people talk about global warming, you're starting to see that. But the problem is the political class isn't responding to it. They seem to be deaf to the fact that all the so-called experts have admitted that they were wrong. We're supposed to be listening to all these experts and their projections. This is the science that we're told to listen to. Projections, mm-hmm. And you have Anthony Fauci openly contradicted himself. He said one number in the New England Journal of Medicine, declaring it to be no worse than the seasonal flu, the COVID-19. Then he goes, I think, on Meet the Press and multiplies it by a factor of 10 and says, oh, it could be like close more than 1%, which is a lot more. Mm-hmm. But no one's asking why he contradicted himself. And now we have, of course, this character Bill Gates running around as the guru of the future, prescribing mm-hmm. all types of conditions that he's mm-hmm. setting for the reemergence of humanity from their house arrest. That's mandatory vaccines or de facto mandatory vaccines, immunity passports, and these things. This is just for a lousy bug. It strains credulity to see that this is actual genuine response or even a misguided or overreaction. It's pure malice that we're seeing here.
Well, I would agree with you. And a month ago, I wrote an article that I kind of took off on a little research jaunt to try and figure out why the hysteria smells so much like climate change hysteria. Mm-hmm. That bothered me a lot. And so I wrote an article called The Common Roots of Climate Change and COVID-19 Hysteria. And as I traced the pronouncement of the coronavirus pandemic back to a particular university in England named Imperial College. It's in London. And one particular professor there, Neil Ferguson, was the guy. He's an epidemiologist. And he's the one that made the original computer model that said 500,000 Brits would die and 1.2 million Americans would die. And at the same time, he also conjured up policies that were delivered to America and England, at the minimum, probably others too, but at least specifically America and England, that gave recommendations on what we would have to do to save ourselves. And those recommendations were very specific: shut down all the schools, universities, and lower grade schools, social distancing, and shut down, have people stay at home, self-quarantine, and basically shut down the economic system altogether for a period of time. That would save the world from the coronavirus. And, at first people say, oh, well, that's so. I mean, somebody had to, blow the whistle here. Well, here's the thing. Imperial College is one of those new global colleges that measures their success according to the social impact they have, and they are a sustainable development university. They say it all over their website. Every department, every education department within their college or university is steeped in sustainable development. They have very close ties to every agency at the United Nations, and they have been in that relatively small cabal of universities who have produced all of these crackpot global warming models over the last 25 years. And this is at the heart of it. These computer models have no real data in them, and the real data they had, they bastardized. But Imperial College is one of that group that has produced these computer models saying basically the world's going to fry in 12 years or 20, 34, pick a date, any date, doesn't matter. And when the global warming hysteria failed, and it has failed, even Greta Thunberg couldn't get it going again.
Yeah.
And she tried. I mean, that was really the last ditch effort. But global warming obviously was not going to get it done. And this same college that was involved in global warming hysteria all of a sudden jumps onto the pandemic bandwagon. And they take a computer model very similar to what they use for climate change, plugged in, you know, health figures, whatever, make assumptions, no real data at all, just assumptions. And they make this crazy prediction, throw it out to the world. It's essentially the equivalent of yelling fire in a crowded theater. And people panicked. And technocrats around the world, of course, in various countries, whatever, rose to that occasion and said, this is what we need to do. We need to do all those things. Well, every one of the policy recommendations that came out of Imperial College were actually the things that we have done. And you say, well, I thought our politicians came up with that. Well, you're wrong. They didn't. All of these policies we're experiencing today and complaining about, a lot of people are anyway, came out of the Imperial College from this study. And when you consider the source, all of a sudden it starts to make sense what's going on. These people hijacked the narrative from day one.
Mm-hmm.
There was a problem in China, but you know what? That's China's problem initially. That's just China's problem. China always has problems, seems like. And this is just one of their problems.
But, and, of course, Neil Ferguson going in has hardly had a record of accuracy.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, I was going...
That's an understatement.
Foot and mouth disease, H1...
People think somebody like Ferguson is a genius because he's an epidemiologist. And I'll tell you, I guess I can understand how people misunderstand this.
A lot of people we see characters involved with have failed upward in their careers.
Well, I suppose, but an epidemiologist is a statistician, not medical. He's not trained in anything medical at all. Mm-hmm. He's not a doctor. He has no credentials whatsoever as far as healthcare is concerned. His PhD, I don't remember where he got it from, so it was a university in England. His PhD was in the philosophy of physics. Nothing to do with biology, nothing to do with medicine whatsoever. And this guy is a statistician. He's a mathematician. And he created these computer models. In my opinion, he had too much time on his hands for about 20 years. And he created this computer model to track pandemics, thinking he's going to be a hero one day. And he didn't actually try to do the same thing with bad viruses before, like bird flu, H1N1. And SARS and MERS and whatever, and Ebola, he worked on that too. Everybody yawned and went back to sleep before. Well, this time it took. And, people lift this guy up as a god, thinking, oh, this guy's some kind of medical genius, man. We got to listen to him. I'm sorry, guys. He's a mathematician and a statistician and nothing more.
And
no credentials in the dog catcher to run the world.
Yeah, he's the director of the Vaccine Impact Modeling Consortium at Imperial mm-hmm. College of London. His model was picked up by the World Health Organization, which has been recommended to the United States and in the UK, and apparently followed throughout Europe as well. There's the mad cow disease fiasco, where based on his modeling, they killed 12,000 heads of livestock, and of course this was considered a gross overreaction, but it did fundamentally change agriculture. A lot of small holdings went bankrupt, and they were absorbed by big agro, which
yes, again, they were.
So you might understand that might have been the motivation for that. The same thing with the bird flu, for understanding with poultry, a lot of the small operations were shut down because of the bird flu hysteria. Oddly enough, he was fired, sacked from that position during the foot and mouth disease crisis. But nevertheless, he received an Order of the British Empire medal for his
wonderful
good work for the system, I guess. But just interesting enough, his department is a recipient of Gavi and Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation funding, which seems to be a pattern.
Yes.
In this, and the same thing with with our experts over here, with Dr. Fauci and Deborah Birx, that both have ties to Bill Gates.
Yes.
So that seems to be, you know, like a network here where they're doing the bidding, at least of the interest that Bill Gates represents. Because I wouldn't, yes. I wouldn't say that Bill Gates is the is Blofeld. Yes. Although Jeff Bezos looks like Blofeld, but
yes, he does.
I mean, again, we're confronted with you know, a moderate to severe flu season, something that happens every few years. I mean, I think in 1958, the equivalent of 200,000 Americans died from the flu. Society wasn't shut down because of it. The economy didn't shut down. 68, there was a bad flu that killed like 78,000 Americans. Remember, the population of America was like 200 million back then. You know, so never before. And I cited the influenza, Spanish influenza. 600,000 Americans died, and you had some local policies of canceling or postponing events and these things. Oddly enough, they failed to postpone a bond drive in Philadelphia in 1918, and that 1 month they had like 5,000 deaths in Philadelphia. Next month they had none, so it ran its course. But one thing that's odd is they've proposed this crazy, like, sheltering it in place, not going out. They're penalizing physical activity, going out in the sun. California's now trying to crack down on beachgoers. And it's the worst advice ever from a health standpoint. So you got to wonder, you got to scratch your head. Like, I mean, why should we even listen to these people? And why are they doing it, you know? Okay, we're recording. Okay, we're back. Lost Skype there. Sorry for technical difficulties. So, I'm sorry, forgot where we left off. So, basically, you know, they've shut down the economy. These experts have all proven wrong, almost to a man and woman. You wrote an article comparing sort of the agenda of a climate change or global warming agenda to this COVID-19, and also how recently, or at least this year, there was a Green New Deal bill that was proposed. Mm-hmm. And your suspicion is that a lot of the Green New Deal will be implemented on the other side of this, sort of as a condition for reopening the economy.
It absolutely will. And we already see calls for that everywhere, all around the world. The green crowd is all jumping on the bandwagon now. That is, the same people who were pushing climate change are jumping on the bandwagon of COVID now, saying COVID is going to be our free ride to the Green New Deal or something like that, sustainable development. And this was the same type of MO that we saw back in the financial meltdown 2007-2008. And during that time, for instance, President Obama, using stimulus money, pushed through the initial round of smart grid implementation in America, where smart meters were put on people's homes and businesses. And, you know, data started to be collected by Wi-Fi and so on. This is a major technocratic meme that would only have been possible with stimulus money. Nobody was paying attention to the stimulus money. They figured, oh, that's going to be great. I forget what the exact number is, like $300 or $400 million that he put into the kitty to dole out to all the utilities to make test programs for smart meters. Well, this is the same thing's going to happen here. Smart city technology. In fact, we already see the onslaught of surveillance technology being implemented everywhere you look now. Everybody wants to get into your skin, you know, to find out, do they have it or do they not have it or whatever.
Yeah, they're calling it contact tracing.
That's exactly
with
right.
With your smartphone.
Yeah. So life is, you know, life is changing. Again, with stimulus money, when it starts to be thrown around, every shark in the world is, you know, feeding frenzy time, right? And there will be a lot of money spent on Green New Deal stuff to turn cities green, to implement green projects, you know, create quote unquote green jobs, whatever that is. And people just like to call it green because it reminds them of money, I guess. I don't know. But there's no end to this. At this point, the spigot is open. Stimulus money is going to flow. and it will fund a lot of green projects around the world. Economically speaking, however, I have to say this because of my economic background, any money spent on green anything is misinvestment and disinvestment at best. That means it will never produce the return that they say it will produce.
Yeah, think Solyndra.
Yes, that's exactly. Yeah. Think Solyndra. This is when you put capitalism free enterprise up against sustainable development or green economy, gangrene sets in immediately, and it's always the victim is always capitalism free enterprise. We've seen this in little pockets all over the world for some time now. But now, if they're successful in spending, making all this stimulus spending or a large part of it on green things, it will be misinvestment that will produce no return whatsoever. It's just equivalent to throwing the money down down the toilet. It'll do nothing.
And I guess the stated objective of Agenda 21 and then now Agenda 2030, which is sort of implemented in the Green New Deal, is zero economic growth. And boy, we're getting that, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. That, you know, the climate hystericists could not have had a better outcome in any other scenario than this. They are thrilled that carbon footprint's down, that's, you know, some, like the canals in Italy are clean again, clear all of a sudden. You can actually see the fish swim, they say. That's in Venice. And they're talking about, you know, all of the, you know, the animals are coming out of the, you know, forest to re-inhabit the cities. And this is just their best possible outcome they could have to shut down the economic system. And what they're already saying is, if we can keep it in this state, why, we will meet our 2030 objectives of, you know, climate change mitigation or whatever. And that's just insane. These people are just, I hate to say they're blowing smoke. I don't know what they're blowing, but they're smoking grass or something. I don't know. But this is just insanity. And the one thing that's really interesting, I have to bring this up. But, well, you know, we've already talked about, by the way, the fact that the numbers, the real data coming out now is destroying these computer models. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's an absolute joke. What's less of a joke is that people like Dr. Birx are already saying that because of what they did, they are successful at lowering the numbers. Oh, my gosh, I want to rip my hair out. It's talk about a con. But
yeah, that's the logic there is, you know, I have this, you know, I think there's a scene in The Simpsons where Lisa pulls out a rock and goes, "See this rock? It protects you from getting attacked. It wards off tigers." And he goes, "I want to buy it." He says, "Well, but Dad, it doesn't work." He says, "Well, there are no tigers around, are there?" You know.
That's it.
You know, and so, but that's, I mean, the some of the horrible projections regarding the death rates, actually, they were built into the prediction. So those were expected to come regardless. And so we know that's not true, you know. And second is, if the World Health Organization was actually, according to their own daily situation reports, was tracking the reported death rate, and it was already declining going into the lockdown. Mm-hmm. So from an epidemiological standpoint, it made no sense to lock it down because it simply wasn't necessary from a public health standpoint. It was, however, necessary for a resetting and realignment of the global economy.
Yes.
You know.
Yes, yes. I remember what I was going to say when I had the technical problem, by the way. Finally, it was every doctor I've talked to or heard from, any kind of MD that actually treats patients, mm-hmm. that excludes all the epidemiologists because they don't even have medical degrees, and it excludes even people like Fauci, who hasn't seen a patient who knows how long. But what real doctors have said consistently, and nobody's listened to them at the top, is that we have always quarantined the sick. Mm-hmm. We have never quarantined the healthy, ever. And the procedure for handling any kind of an outbreak of anything, I don't care what it is, if you have somebody that's sick, you put them into quarantine. That's just the routine knee-jerk reaction. It's worked forever, and it should be working now. But these people flipped that on their head. They said, we're going to quarantine everybody. We're going to quarantine the healthy. And if anybody, any sick people get quarantined, that's good. We're going to quarantine them too. So it's completely out of sync with traditional medicine. Completely out of sync.
Yeah, just the notion that if you have a virus going around, for the most, you want the general public kind of getting exposed to it as they walk around outside, particularly in springtime, and you'll have people have a greater immunity and be able to negotiate or handle whatever is out there. And they've created a situation where perhaps people might be vitamin D deprived now and be more vulnerable, and then they'll turn around and blame it on this is the second phase or something, second wave.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. This has been particularly problematic for people over 75 years old.
Mm-hmm.
That's unexpected because people over 75 are in that dying zone. You know, they're going to have stuff happen to them. If anything tips them over, they're going to be in trouble real fast. But the stats that are coming out now, like The Hill just ran an article a few days ago that said that for people 18 years old, of course, all the schools are closed now, right?
Mm-hmm.
At least in our state, I think most across the country are closed. For people under 18 years old, the of death is zero for 100,000 people. Zero! Yet they shut down the whole thing. Well, that really destroys the model. And then for people aged, 18 to 25, which is the majority of the working class that are out there putting their back to the shovel, for them, it's 0.01% or 10 people per 100,000 in population. Well, this is no worse than the flu that we've had anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's always sad when somebody gets sick or somebody dies and you weren't expecting them to die. It's a terrible thing to happen. But the important thing to note here, and if there's one takeaway from this, I want people to see the connection between climate change hysteria and COVID hysteria. I call it the panic of 2020, and I think this is going to go down in history as the great panic of 2020. With no substance behind it, it will be panic of 2020. There was a big meeting that the United Nations held in 2012. It was the 20th anniversary of Agenda 21 from 1992. And the UN produced a big report called Sustainable Development from Brundtland to Rio 2012. So Brundtland represented Agenda 21 from 1992. And in the executive summary of this report, it was just so telling. This is what it said. This is a direct quote. Climate change has become the de facto proxy for implementation of the sustainable development agenda. That says it all. Climate change has always been the shill, if you will, to drive people into sustainable development. That's the only thing on their mind. However, the next part of the sentence after the semicolon says this, but the framework of the climate change negotiations are not always the appropriate forum for broader strategic discussions of sustainable development. That means they hid it from the climate change discussions that the real agenda was sustainable development.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just so clear what their agenda is. And yet, people look at it and say, I don't believe that. That's a conspiracy. Who could possibly do that? I'll tell you what, I get pretty fed up with this whole conspiracy nonsense. I've suffered this for over 40 years in my career, and it just drives me as crazy today as it did back in the 1970s. But ignorant people claim that these things don't mean anything, and yet that is the verbatim testimony that came out of their mouth. Just like, you can't be any more clear.
Yeah, there's a funny thing. There was a clip I saw of Dr. Fauci being questioned at the White House, one of his many briefings. And a reporter asked him, says, some are claiming that there's a conspiracy to pad the death reports, the death numbers. And then the report adds, without any evidence. What do you have to say to that? And Dr. Fauci goes, these are conspiracy theories. They should be ignored. But, they're just nonsense. They should just be ignored. Well, it turns out that both Dr. Birx and Anthony Fauci have admitted to that very thing. When they admitted to the fact that the guidelines for filling out death certificates are different for COVID-19 than are for in any other circumstance where doctors are being told to be very generous and liberal. Whereas in the past, you're supposed to be as specific as possible for any number of reasons. And you have that doctor who's also a state senator in Minnesota who talked about the guideline, the directions he received from the CDC to pad the numbers. And also the fact that hospitals are being paid a lot more money to declare patients COVID-19 patients and to put them on ventilators. So there's that incentive, you know. So I don't you call that a conspiracy. I don't maybe that word bothers you. But there's definitely some networking and colluding going on here.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely there is. Usually the word conspiracy theory is thrown at anybody who doesn't support the approved narrative that you know, the global elite are putting out from the top down. Mm-hmm. If you don't follow that line, well, you're just automatically discarded as some kind of either radical right or radical left, whatever. Doesn't matter. They just get you out. They're in the middle. They always position themselves in the middle, and everybody else is on the fringe. And usually what you find out as just a little bit of time goes by is that they were the ones doing the very thing that they were accusing other people of doing. It's like, you know, this kind of makes you think of Russia before the fall of the USSR, where it was a joke almost back then. Whenever the Soviet Union accused us of doing something, everybody knew that's what they were doing. Mm-hmm. There was not even any discussion anymore. No proof. We don't need proof. Don't send spies in, whatever. If they're accusing us of doing something, we know from experience that's what they're doing, and they're just trying to, you know, cover their trail a little bit, and they accuse everybody else. We see the same thing happening in North Korea. They always blame us for something. You know, that's exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, but the difference is I think most Russians were keen to that, and probably most North Koreans are probably keen to whereas Americans.
I think the Russian people probably just yawned and walked away. A lot of Americans never knew that was even going on, but amongst policy circles in America, whenever Russia made some big accusation against the United States, everybody over here just like laughed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we know what they're doing now.
and to make this, I've done a couple shows just on kind of outlining the conspiracy, at least the evidence for it. And mm-hmm. I ran across another article. There are various articles you run into, and various people have done research on the connections between virtually every figure promoting the COVID-19 crisis being tied back to Bill Gates. And here's a good example. Oregon governor was advised by Bill Gates' shills. There's an article written by George McKenzie, I think is his name, and over at the Occidental Review. And he talked about how Oregon's COVID-19 response was directed by experts at the Institute for Disease Modeling. All the authors of the report were directly tied to Bill Gates funding, whether through universities that are recipient of Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation money, or through various, this Institute for Disease Modeling is funded by Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Yep. And they're directing the response, which is promoting lockdown, which Bill Gates has been advocating, because the lockdown becomes the, suppose it's to flatten a curve or prevent it from being spread, but it creates the economic desperation and misery where people will accept anything at the other end of this. One thing would be a vaccine shot and immunity passports and monitoring surveillance as a condition for being able to come out and earn a living again. And, that's right. You know, and so again, we have Bill Gates sort of directing this. Of course, his history going back years about talking about vaccines. He called it the vaccine decade, and talking about epidemics were going to kill tens of millions of people. Of course, his foundation, working with Johns Hopkins University and also the World Economic Forum, conducted that event 201 just in October, which sort of predicted this entire thing. Other things like the Rockefeller Foundation have produced papers. They had their own Operation Lockstep, which is again a sort of a war game scenario. Pretty much predicting the very thing. In fact, only the only difference is in these scenarios that they have, they have hundreds of millions of people dying, whereas this, you know, it's relatively trivial. Again, nothing remarkable really outside a regular flu season. So we have all that to go with. All tied to Bill Gates, even Fauci and Burks and that agenda. So that's something, I mean, you got to consider at least, right? I mean,
well, it is. And the goal of all that is to create a system of tracking that will track every human on Earth. I think it's just really clear that the overarching goal of all of the concept of passports, you know, do you have it? Do you not have it? And denying people services, you know, if they mm-hmm. you can't go here if you haven't had it, or you can go here, you can only go here if you haven't, whatever. All of this is driving the concept of a universal ID. Largely, at this point, looks like it's going to be based on blockchain technology. Mm-hmm. And it will be a universal ID for everything people do.
And if Bill Gates gets his way, it's a nano tattoo, a chip, well, more or less.
Yeah, he could, but you know, even short of that, he's still jockeyed to be the number one person to create the system of universal IDs. However it would be implemented, there's lots of ways. Mm-hmm. In India right now, they're just implementing it with fingerprints, which is pretty unique, and facial recognition in some other cases. But once they have you positively ID'd and a couple of different ways to spot you in a crowd, your master ID number, which is be kind of like your social security number in America, but it's for, you know, unique to everybody on Earth. Once you have that unique number and you can be easily identified one way or another, by like facial recognition or by iris scan or mm-hmm. way you walk or your heartbeat and so on, then everything that you do can be recorded against that ID number. And that also means that all of the un-ID'd people in the world right now will not be able to escape. They will not be able to hold out. They will have to join the system. They will be forced to join the system, and there'll be no such thing as anonymity once that happens. But this has been the holy grail of technocrats ever since technocracy convened in the 1930s. They want to have a universal system of identification. And by the way, just to clarify that, they said that back then, and they're still saying it today. The three of the main requirements of technocracy, number three said, by means of the registration of energy converted, consume, make possible balanced load. Then it said, provide a continuous inventory of all production and consumption. Okay. Then the next one says, provide a specific registration of the type, kind, et cetera, of all goods and services, where produced and where used. And then finally, this is the big one, provide specific registration of the consumption of each individual, plus a record and description of the individual. 1933. This is exactly the same thing as persisted all these years. Mm-hmm. Universal ID and track everything. Everything that's consumed, everything that they do, everywhere you go, et cetera.
That's ID 2020.
Exactly right.
And they say that, I think part of in their statement, mission statement, they say that everyone has a right to be able to prove who they are.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, you're twisting it around. Everyone has a right to anonymity and privacy, not to positively prove who they are. So they're twisting the right. I mean, that's such a twist. And Bill Gates, again, he is openly advocate. I was reading an article about conspiracy theories and Bill Gates, and the article was dismissive of it. And one of the crazy conspiracy theories is that Bill Gates wants to chip everybody. But he has proposed that very thing with his tattoo.
Yep.
So again, conspiracy theory, but then here he is admitting it. So it's almost like the cognitive dissonance kicks in here, because here he is, he's just out and out saying it. He's out, claiming that people have to be locked down until they accept his jab. Despite the fact that he's on, his various experimental vaccine programs throughout Africa and India and Latin America have been very controversial because they've paralyzed, sterilized hundreds of thousands, even killed hundreds of thousands of people. And that doesn't seem to get much interest of the Western press.
None at all. Matter of fact, they won't even talk about it. They consider that to be itself to be a conspiracy theory. And yet it is a fact that that Gates and his vaccine crowd got thrown out of India altogether. They said this guy just wrecked our whole country, and they said, you're out of here.
And that the fact that he can do that, his organizations can do that and not face any criminal prosecution, suggests that, again, we're dealing with a power which is beyond the rule of law, beyond the courts, the things that we associate as being in charge, politicians. Because really, if you were to secretly sterilize hundreds of thousands of women, that's a crime. But they've done it.
Yes, it is. And they should have been held to account. But then we know, a lot of the global elite have always escaped the law. It's just not written for them. And there's just lots of examples, even in recent history. Just think of Jeffrey Epstein, for instance.
Yeah, well, the interesting connection too, Billy. Yes, and that's part of the function, perhaps why our political class seems to be so on board of that. Part of that is compromising. They're compromats, as they call it, because they're either bribed or blackmailed to do the bidding.
Right.
Our political managerial class. That's why we see these governors. That was interesting. Interview with Tucker Carlson and Murphy, the governor of New Jersey. Mm-hmm. Tucker Carlson pointedly asked him, what gives you the authority to suspend the Bill of Rights? And he goes, that's above my pay grade. Okay, yeah. So who told you to do it, Governor Murphy?
Really?
And all these governors, these 40 or so governors, they're in open violation of their own oaths of office in the U.S. Constitution. There's some discussion of, I'm not holding out much hope for this, but Bill Barr is investigating overreach. You have to investigate it. It's in your face. What are you talking about? But if the federal government can come in the name of protecting voting rights or integration of schools and civil rights, throughout in the states, which it has done in the past 50, 60 years, mm-hmm. Are not these lockdown orders gross violations of people's civil liberties?
Exactly.
That's
my contention with Citizens for Free Speech. Absolutely, it is.
But there's a back to your technocracy idea here. Again, we see evidence for this forethought, or at least exploiting the crisis, not letting the crisis go to waste. There was an article written by Whitney Webb at the Last American Vagabond called "Techno Tyranny: How the U.S. National Security State is Using Coronavirus to Fulfill an Orwellian Vision." And this outfit, the Electronic Privacy Information Center, EPIC, fired a FOIA request, and they got a document that from the National Security Commissions on Artificial Intelligence. Apparently this was created in one of the National Defense Acts or something a couple of years ago. But it produced this National Security Commission on Artificial Intelligence produced a report that predicted a fourth industrial revolution, basically creating an AI economy to compete with China's. And we have to get ahead of China. We have to be more tyrannical and more invasive than China to compete with it. I don't understand that. But how it converts to economic productivity and competitiveness and quality, and productivity. But anyway, it calls for kind of doing away of legacy systems. What they call legacy systems are like retail shopping, cash, personal ownership of vehicles, and it calls for this reordering of society. And lo and behold, this COVID-19 crisis is there to present the opportunity to implement this. And we're seeing part of the function of the lockdown is to destroy, may not to immediately destroy retail, but to destroy the small local owned business, mom and pop shops. So only the big corporations will be left standing, the chain operations. And once that happens, these corporations can implement policies like total surveillance, voluntary vaccinations. If you want to work for us, you have to get a vaccine. So a lot of this program is being implemented corporately, the same way that YouTube and Google and Facebook practice censorship. The government doesn't have to do it. I heard recently that various states had pressured, supposedly talked to Facebook about not allowing various groups that are sponsoring protests in the various states to have a page on Facebook. So it's the thing is, it's a corporate agenda. So it's not, it doesn't follow government. It's a corporate agenda that's being carried out here.
Right. you know, just in passing, you mentioned the artificial intelligence and how our government is racing against China right now. The so-called Defense Innovation Board, which is an organization supposedly to guide artificial intelligence and development of artificial intelligence in the United States and the government as well as private industry. The chairman of that board is none other than Eric Schmidt. Yeah, the former chairman of not only Google, but the parent company Alphabet as well.
Wasn't their motto used to be, don't be evil?
Well, it used to be. They dropped that, and then motto became, don't cross the creepy line.
Yeah.
whatever that is. But it's interesting. An interesting thing about Eric Schmidt is that he was, a few years ago, inducted into the ranks of the Trilateral Commission as a member.
Mm-hmm.
And so he is now a member of the, you know, official group that drove all of this new international economic order from the get-go. And now he's essentially in charge, or at least he's the strong man of this Defense Innovation Board to direct the future of AI in America. And all I can think when I saw that, all I can think is just God help us.
Yeah. And of course, Google got its start, I think, from InQtel, which also yes. started Facebook.
Yes.
So the InQtel, again, is the investment arm of the CIA, which is strange, isn't it?
It's a venture capital firm.
Yeah.
That's funded by the CIA's taxpayer money. And the chairman of InQtel, by the way, is a 20-year resident of the state of Arizona. And he happens to also be the president of Arizona State University. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, it looks like, they seem to have control of the levers of power. Now, whether or not they hold all the cards or not, that's another story.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, word is getting out there, and that's probably the most important thing that people can do now is get information out there so people, know what's going on, have an idea what's going on, so then they know how to respond to it.
Right.
The biggest thing is getting a broader understanding that, for the most part, I mean, really, I would say from the standpoint that this was a pandemic, it's a hoax.
Mm-hmm.
What I mean by that is it's the reality of the situation was grossly misrepresented to the American people to carry out a COVID operation, a secret agenda.
Yes.
And as you've cited in your research, it's really not that secret. It's hiding in plain sight. It's just people's unwillingness to accept it, to do the research, to turn off the TV and do a little reading and critical thinking, to take off their masks, breathe some fresh air, and start thinking.
Yep.
And that's what's critically needed now, because right now you have these budding protests. Apparently May 1st is a plan, you get these protests out. I heard it just in Georgia that the governor was pressured to release stop the lockdown order early because people mm-hmm. simply weren't abiding by it.
Yeah.
And that's, I heard that anecdotally. And that's what I recommend people to do now, is simply ignore these orders. Have no standing in law. They're illegitimate. You can simply ignore it. And everyone just simply ignores it. They can't do anything about it. It's like the same way the Berlin Wall was dismantled. The government didn't do it. The people did it.
Mm-hmm.
And the government yep. withered away. And that's, it's kind of how we're going to have to respond to this.
Right. Exactly.
Massive civil disobedience.
Yes, it will be us or nobody in the end.
Because no one else is going to do it. These politicians aren't going to give you your freedoms back.
Yes.
You have to take them back. And the way you take them back is you have to delegitimize them, ridicule them, show them for the charlatans and the crooks that they are, and also expose the oligarchs behind them. Bill Gates has to become public enemy number one. I know he's not the center of it. I know he's not the head of the octopus, the spider, but he represents an interest that people have to know that there is an oligarchic class, an elite, that actually want to harm, do away with a large section of humanity and experiment with the remainder, with who remains.
Yes. He's a computer nerd, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
He's a computer programmer originally, of course. He developed Windows. And, otherwise he has no credentials for doing anything what he's doing today other than he's just a technocrat.
Yeah, as someone quipped, Bill Gates can't even protect my computer from a virus, but he thinks he can protect humanity from it.
Exactly. Yeah, I had plenty of them when Windows, especially when Windows 3 was alive and good, you know, cranking.
He probably planted them.
Well, there's a lot of people that thought that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was ever true, but it was a pedestrian effort at best, in my opinion. And the operating system was just a plague to a lot of companies back in that day. But, you know, Gates now is doing all these things as a technocrat. You can't look at Bill Gates and say, oh, there goes a Marxist or there goes a communist.
Yeah.
He's not communist and he's not socialist. He's one of the richest men in the world and he's a flaming technocrat.
Well, what we're seeing here is the culmination.
Yes.
Of your and your late partner's Anthony Sutton's research going, you know, way back to the Bolshevik Revolution, how these world-changing events were managed or manipulated by a banking interest that were neither communist nor socialist. They were, broadly speaking, collectivist with them at the gaining control of everything.
Yes, just to gain control. Exactly. Yep.
And, you know, at some in Russia, communism was the vector for that or the method for that to phase it out. And we saw that in China with David Rockefeller and in the 70s. I mean, they needed to go through that horrible phase of Mao to set China up for the 70s, late 70s, when they were sort of reformed and started developing their economy. And this is when the United States started, outsourcing its industrial base to China to set up the system we have today, which can be so easily manipulated with currency.
Yes. In 2001, Time Magazine, which had long been associated with the Trilateral Commission as one of their media organs, Time Magazine wrote a long article and declared that China was a technocracy. Hmm. A lot of people just passed right over that, didn't pay any attention to it. But I dug it out of the archives when I learned about historic technocracy and looked at it. And it just so happened a Zbigniew Brzezinski who was almost single-handedly responsible for bringing China back into the world stage. He did that in the Jimmy Carter administration when he was national security advisor. And you go back and look at the history books, people praise Brzezinski for what he did. He said, you know, the people all around him say, it was a big game. You know, he's at the top of his game with this. And when he did his negotiations originally with Chairman Deng, who was a hardcore communist at that point, despicable country. It was in as bad a shape as North Korea is in today. And the question comes up, who mentored them into becoming an economic superpower? Was it, University of Chicago? Was it Stanford? I mean, who mentored these guys to teach them how to do an economic system? Well, it was Zbigniew Brzezinski and his buddies. And what they taught them to do was technocracy. They didn't teach them to do capitalism and free enterprise. They taught them how to create an engineered system that was run by technology and not necessarily directly by politicians. Now, we know it's a blend for sure. But what Brzezinski taught them was antithetical to the American system. And so it wasn't a surprise, or it shouldn't have been a surprise, when American industry made a wholesale exit from here to China. There are all kinds of reasons why they should have done it economically, but they did. China all of a sudden becomes a superpower ready to gobble up the whole world, including us. And people just don't ever really understand the historical side of this. And they should, because we see China doing things today that you cannot write off on communism. For instance, you've got the social credit scoring system. I mean, that's just draconian. That's Orwellian. And yet they're controlling people by algorithm, by artificial intelligence. They set the rules into the algorithms, and that's the end of it. They don't have to even worry about it anymore. The rules will take care of you. And you break enough rules, and a little red light's going to go off on your smartphone, and you won't be able to get into all the places you want to go tomorrow.
Yes, yeah.
You clean your act up.
There was I was watching these videos. There's one website. I forget the name of it. Oh, no, sorry. It was the Clinton Initiative. The Clinton Foundation was hosting a series of videos with Andrew Cuomo and Gavin Newsom, and they're talking about contact testing, which is surveillance, Orwellian surveillance, using smartphones. And they're talking about raising an army of experts to enforce this.
Mm-hmm.
And educated humanitarian, of course, you know. And they're kind of, and they're all talking about all these control measures. And what they're saying is, you know, if you get within 6 feet of someone who is tested positive, of course, the tests aren't reliable, you can be quarantined.
Yep.
Without any due process, just because you get within a few feet of somebody, this is assuming everyone has their cell phone on them and they can be monitoring. And you just think about that. You wait a second. Never before, this idea that just because you may be a carrier of a, you know, of a virus, that the government can quarantine you. And then you have the social credit system where they have to do away with cash, and everyone has to identify themselves before they walk into a bar or a sporting event or something. And if you get the wrong color, you're not allowed to go. And what if you're a dissident? You know, you don't agree with the system. You won't be allowed in anymore. And you won't be able to bank or engage in commerce. And that's the social credit system that they've implemented, at least partially, in China. And they want to do it here under the guise of public health.
Yes. And they are doing it here. It's just already being blanketed across the country, even as we're speaking about it. Police departments are gobbling this stuff up like crazy. And the companies that are making it, and by the way, a lot of these companies that are making these new systems today, it was patently illegal in America to test those things originally. And so they took them to other countries like China and the technology there, and they improved it and tested it and whatever, got it where it really worked well. Now they're bringing it all back. They're repatriating it back to America. And it's acceptable now because of the crisis. So all of these draconian surveillance methodologies are being reimported back into America wholesale. They're being gobbled up by states, by counties, by cities, by the federal government, by the Department of Homeland Security, et cetera. They're all implementing these high-tech recognition systems. There's all kinds of them, by the way, not just facial. But, you know, they're talking at one company. I just posted an article today. Said that CCTV cameras measure heartbeat and social distancing. Now, this is artificial intelligence using existing cameras. They can take the feed and put it into their AI program, and they figured out a way. Don't ask me how, I don't know, but they figure out a way to detect the heartbeat of the person from some distance away and whether or not they're social distancing from somebody else. And it just so happens that your heartbeat is like your fingerprint. It's unique to you. I didn't really realize that until I read this article myself. But they're finding ways to identify people that are kind of non-traditional, what we're used to, you know, like iris scan, fingerprints, that sort of thing. Now they say they can even determine how you walk when you're walking away from a camera, that is absolutely unique as well and can identify you as a person. So they have all these ways to identify who you are, and now they're looking at invasive things like measuring your heartbeat, taking your temperature from 50 yards away from the camera. You know, it's like, will we even have a chance?
Well, not only are these things incredibly invasive and actually illegal under U.S. law, I have to assume that all that electromagnetic radiation has some very negative consequences on people's health.
Well, you know, we're already saturated in this EMF soup, I call it. I don't know. There's never going to be an end to it, it doesn't look like, at this point. None of it's particularly good for human beings, generally speaking. And everybody doesn't walk by a 4G or 5G transmitter and fall over dead. But I have met people that are so sensitive to EMF radiation that they cannot live in town. They have to live way out in the county where there are no cell towers, no nothing, to where they can get away from the EMF. If they even drive into town and get near an EMF source, that's a radiation source, they break out in hives, they'll get all kinds of physical problems and stuff. There's a, you know, 1-2% of the population is really sensitive to electromagnetic radiation. And this is a class of people, even if nobody else had a problem, this is a class of citizens that get absolutely no mind share whatsoever. Nobody cares about them. It's like, well, that's tough, you know.
Or they're declared insane or something. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, that just makes a statement, too, that EMF is not something that humans should have been, you know, bathed in the first place. And, you know, the fact that 1-2% of people have problem with it is just, that proves the point. And it's good that that the other 98% doesn't have a problem. But then again, you wonder, okay, how about you keep piling it on?
Yes.
Adding more and more and more. What's going to happen when you get to a level and all of a sudden 2% jumps to 3%, and then it jumps to 4% of people are really got the problems?
Or I mean, from what I understand, 5G was originally developed as a weapon for crowd control.
Yes, it was.
So it can be easily be weaponized. You know, you can give someone a heart attack. We, you know, in the 70s, they had a heart attack gun. And that was that was on congressional hearings in the CIA.
Yes.
They brought out a heart attack.
Yeah, I know. You remember the sonic weapons that were used against the U.S. Embassy in Cuba?
Yes.
A couple of years ago. Those sonic weapons are so sophisticated that they really messed those people up when they, hosed them with this stuff for like days on end, and they almost literally went mad in the end.
And I think some of the symptoms for electronic radiation or, you know, reaction are flu-like symptoms, because these are general symptoms.
Yes.
You know, so yeah. You have that element to it. To me, I don't think there's one cause. I think if you look at the whole Wuhan flu, COVID-19 is, I think they've probably drawn from a lot of cases around the world. People with respiratory illnesses that are caused by toxic exposure, bad air, and they've called it COVID-19. In fact, they've admitted to doing that. So the whole idea that this thing went around the world, I think, is somewhat dubious. Because really, with the media, with the crackdown, with the economic lockdown, the closing of March Madness and Major League Baseball, if you shut those things down, these are very important in American culture, and also controlling. It's very important in the regime's mind control, the breads and circuses. And the fact that was canceled convinced many people that it was serious. My contention is that they had to do that to create the illusion that it was serious. It's the effect proving the cause. Because we see it now with the mortality rates, which haven't gone up at all, actually. So you'd think it would have gone up if there was a special pandemic going on. There's also been a unique drop in, a suspicious drop in, in pneumonia deaths.
That's right. And yeah, all those got thrown over into the COVID-19 bracket, basically. So yeah, there's lots of problems with it. I've cautioned people for, gosh, I don't know, ever since the EMF issue, the 5G issue became an issue, I've cautioned protesters against getting too deeply embedded into the health issue, even though it is an issue. Obviously, it's an issue.
Yeah.
But the real driver behind 5G is to light up the Internet of Things. It has nothing to do with the health issue. And so what has happened here with this COVID thing, and I'm sure this did not start with just some normal, so to speak, normal conspiracy guy sitting down in Alabama or somewhere, with too much time on his hands. Somebody introduced the concept from externally that 5G was directly linked to the coronavirus deaths in China. And that was the real cause. It was a combination of 5G plus the virus and yada, yada. And then all of a sudden people start burning down 5G towers in England.
Yeah.
And it became, just a big, huge thing. And what it did in the end of it was it absolutely sandbagged all those people that had hitched their star to the health effects of 5G. And it's like, man, they took them out and they never had a clue that it was even coming. And so I caution people against, making a connection that isn't absolutely proven already, and even a little bit in the mainstream by that time, because we have a limited amount of time to protest these things and to be effective. You know, if we're going to do anything effectively to neuter these things, we need to think smarter and we need to work smarter too.
Oh, already? I mean,
watch out for all these little, landmines that the enemy throws at us.
Well, little things like, the Catholic Church canceled Easter this year. I mean, it didn't cancel Easter, but it suspended all services. I mean, even during Holy Week, which is, Easter is the biggest holiday in the Catholic calendar. I mean, that's it. Yep. More than Christmas.
Yes,
and the bishops just completely folded on this. I consider it a grand betrayal. Now it's just accepted that churches are closed. And those pastors that are brave enough to hold mass are then they're pilloried in the press. And I heard there's some talk about people burning churches down because they're spreading the virus. There are an article like that.
Yes. It's just such a shame. Everybody, when people get filled with fear, they just do crazy things. You know, fear usually turns to anger. That's the next stopping place for fear. Mm-hmm. And we see that's exactly what's happening. People get scared. And, you know, if some lady that's just frightened out of her brain sees somebody walking down on the other side of the street and he's passed too close to somebody, the lady that's just fear-stricken, you know, yells across the street, "You're not social distancing, you moron." And it's like, well, that's normal. I mean, that's human behavior. But this is where this has brought us, is people are acting completely irrational. And we have to interpret it and kind of wade through it and try to keep some measure of rationality to the whole thing. Somebody's got to, for Pete's sake.
Well, it's not going to be the media.
It's not going to be media, and it's obviously not going to be the politicians.
Because they're capitalizing on a fear, you know.
I know they are. They see fear as it's a politician's dream.
Well, there's that doctor, and he's a state senator, and this is where you get pockets of resistance or of honesty in Minnesota. And he talked about, you know, them. I mentioned earlier what they're doing with the death certificates. So they're barring from other deaths and blaming it on COVID-19. He joked that he got hit by a bus and then they test the corpse for COVID-19 and is positive. They say he died of COVID-19. And that's not too far an exaggeration, but he said it as a joke. But he said, so the reporter from a local station up there in Minnesota goes, "Why would they pad the numbers? Why would they do that? Why would they, you know?" So incredulously, why would they do that? And he goes, he pauses. I know he's thinking. He goes, "Well, fear is a great way to control people."
Yeah.
And he's a state senator, said that, and a doctor. So he's in the political field, and he's in the medical field. Fear, and that's what it is. It's fear. People have to understand that. You know, you're being lied to, manipulated, and you got to turn the damn TV off.
That's a good place to start.
That is not designed to give you any helpful information. Even with the weather has been weaponized. What I mean by that is weather reports are exaggerated just to scare people. You've seen weather reporters claiming it's really windy, then some guy walks behind him nonchalant. So that's what we're confronted with. But, I mean, you say you sort of have a biblical outlook or understanding of these things. And as we close the interview out, you know, I look at these things as Christians, we're told to be as harmless as doves, or as gentle as doves, and as clever as serpents.
Right. Yeah.
And it turns out a lot of Christians haven't been. They're gullible, you know. And I hate it because, you know, a lot of Christians mistake mistake stupidity for piety. Right. And they have to be somewhat savvy or understanding what the political system is like and who's against us, who our enemies are. Christ told us to love our enemies, but not pretend we don't have them.
That's for sure. Yeah, we can't. I guess we can't love them if we don't know who they are.
Yes.
But in a general sense, of course, whether we know them or not, God does. And, you know, he's the one who can look into people's hearts and make a correct assessment on what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, you know, we are literally, to borrow an Old Testament concept, we're watchmen that stand on the wall and watch for the enemy approaching. And this was a very necessary function in the Old Testament, that there were guards posted that protected the people, that when foreigners came to do bad things, they blew the whistle, so to speak, and rallied the troops. And, you know, so in one sense, we're watchmen on the wall. In another sense, there was one of the tribes of Israel, the name of it was Issachar, and it's a little-known tribe. It wasn't a large tribe, but it was one of the 12, and Issachar was noted to be, or the sons of Issachar were noted to be men of understanding, who understood the times, and they knew how Israel should behave during that time. Of course, that's Old Testament. That concept would do well today as well, that we should we should strive to be like the sons of Issachar, understanding the times and being able to tell people, you know, what they should be doing. Not to dictate, not to control or anything like that, but just, you know, to set people straight. And I'll tell you, right now, people are so scared. They're scared to death, and understandably so, in a way. And they're just like sheep that are wandering around in a pasture. They just don't know where to go. Somebody needs to stand up and say, look, okay, let's take a deep breath together. You know, let me tell you what's going on. I'll just put your mind at ease. Better to know the truth than it is to suffer the fear of the unknown. And, you know, let's have a, you know, whatever, have a meal together, spend a little bit of time, take it easy, you know, take a deep breath and help them get their head screwed back on again where it belongs and give them a perspective that makes sense. But right now, there's just not a lot of sense out there.
I mean, they're telling people you can't have birthday parties, you can't have barbecues, you can't go to a ball game, you can't go to church. When Dr. Yeah. Burke says social distancing may last throughout the summer, she's saying that there's not going to be church gatherings.
I know, but you can go to Costco.
But you can go to Costco.
You can go to Walgreens.
Yes.
You can go to Walmart, but you can't go to church. That's the stupidest thing in the world. Absolutely stupid. It just shows up the hypocrisy, the whole thing.
And you watch them on the podium and that the small little stage, they're all well within 6 feet of one another.
Yes.
None of them are wearing masks.
No. No. It's a joke. It's an absolute joke. And people ought to see through it. They don't, but they ought to see through it immediately. That's the way it is.
Yeah. Well, you said, I mean, you've devoted your entire adult life to researching these things. And this is trying to create some encouragement here, because let's face it, society was going in the wrong direction going into this thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of weird things going on. Unfortunately, people don't wake up to these things unless they're confronted with a crisis, you know. And this crisis has given us an opportunity to wake a heck of a lot more people up to the reality of the system than otherwise wouldn't be woken up to, because they're just too darn comfortable.
Yes.
And so this is an opportunity. And I think the ruling elite, I think, have really extended themselves. And mm-hmm. whether or not they succeed or not is based on how we respond to it. And the power really is within us to stop them, because it's all a con. Like I mentioned what happened in Georgia. This is true. If I understand this, people just simply started ignoring the order, and the governor, in order to maintain his legitimacy, said, okay, I'm lifting it.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, and so if you create sort of a widespread understanding that this is all BS, mm-hmm. you create a sort of a crisis in the regime, and you'll get politicians who will climb aboard that galloping horse and pretend like they're leaders, and maybe we'll get what we want, at least partially what we want. And that might just be delaying this, stopping it for right now. That's probably most that we can ask for in this life. But the idea is that, you know, all your research, you know, you painstakingly researched this stuff, wrote books, you and Mr. Sutton, this stuff. And, you know, only a small portion of the public is open to it, is exposed to it, then open to it. But a crisis like this gives you an opportunity to really, for the system to reveal itself. I think David Icke, you know, mm-hmm. who's on this, has been fantastic. He said this cult has walked into the room and exposed them, revealed themselves to everybody, and the doors clicked behind him, and now he is there, and he cannot be hidden anymore. So what are we going to do? And therein lies the opportunity.
Yeah, I think you're right, and there is an opportunity, and I have to say the numbers are probably supporting that a bit. New people subscribing to my news, mm-hmm. for instance, on technocracy.news has gone up by a considerable margin. And, you know, it's not still not where I'd really like it, but it's much, much greater today than it was 6 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And people that are listening to videos and stuff and interviews that I do has also gone up proportionally as well. So people are looking for answers, and they need to, once they find out, then they need to translate that into action, doing something to kick back against this stuff.
Now, here's the difference is going into this thing, the moment from day one, I called it a hoax, just sort of. Well, tongue-in-cheek at first, because it didn't explode originally. But the moment they started making noises, because I was familiar with the problems with the CDC and the World Health Organization, the corruption there, and with the bird flu, or the swine flu thing, the scam that the vaccine scandal that involved with, and also just all these other false pandemics they declared throughout the years. But one thing that I started when they started talking about some of these solutions, how they deal with it, the monitoring, everything, having read your books, I immediately identified it. Ah, this is technocracy.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, and that's the importance of being somewhat literate in these things, because you can immediately identify it, because there's an MO to these things, you know.
Yes, there is.
And there it is. And I immediately identified it because I was familiar with your work. I said, there we go. So, you know, at the very least, I wasn't completely confused by it, nor was I ever scared, you know.
Yep. But, yep, that's good.
So
it's good.
And I think I kept my predator. And I've kept my wits about me, I think.
That's good, too.
So anyway, listen, I want to thank you for coming back on the show.
Oh, my pleasure.
And again, it's Patrick Wood. He is the author of Technocracy Rising, The Trojan Horse of Global Transformation, and Technocracy, The Hard Road to World Order. Two very relevant books now. Very more relevant, perhaps, than ever, unfortunately.
Yes.
But you read those books, you see that sort of the modus operandi of the ruling elite, and how they go about trying to enslave humanity and claim total global control. I mean,
yes,
right. That's not over. I'm not overstating it, am I?
No, you're not. No.
Unfortunately,
for those who really want to live in a scientific dictatorship, all you have to do is just wait. Don't do anything.
That's right. It'll just be downloaded automatically, an app on their phone.
It's coming straight at you. So
it's like,
just wait. You'll get it. If you don't like it, you better stand up and be counted, because it's coming fast.
Yes. And of course, you can follow this. You've posted a lot of articles and editorials at Technocracy News following this, right?
That's right. Technocracy.news continuously every day.
And there's thousands of articles there now, right?
There are thousands and thousands of articles there. And what's interesting is that only about 50% of our website traffic actually comes to the United States anymore.
Hmm.
So routinely 50% is from every other nation on earth, and I've had every other nation on earth watching or following technocracy.news. It's incredible. There's a little map of visitors on the bottom right hand side of my website, and it's got so many red dots on it you can't even see some countries anymore where they are. It's just incredible. But the world is waking up to technocracy as well. It's not just in America.
Yeah, so now I think it's sort of a mad dash now, I think.
Yes. And this is proof to me, the validation to me, that technocracy is the clear and present danger today. Otherwise, the rest of the world would not be as interested as America is right now.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly. Okay, well, thank you so much. I'll let you go.
You bet.
I'll post this soon. I'll send you the link.
That's great. I appreciate it. Take care, and as they say, stay safe. Don't be like a farmer who went out on his tractor and died as a protest and died from COVID the next week.
Oh, yeah, I know. We'll see plenty of those, aren't we?
I know. Reports. Oh, well. Well, anyway, take care. Anytime.
Good night. Thanks so much, then. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, Bye.